You just wait, John. One of these days, you're going to listen to the recording when Blake edits it, and you're going to be like, where was my fun fact? And Blake will be like, it wasn't good enough. I cut it.
Oh, it's
done. Yep.
Snip, 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 snip.
Heartbreaker. In order to get to that level of mobilization, we're going to need a similar level of unity. We are so far away from unified that I think we need to spend some time on that.
What up, world? Welcome to the AmeriPodcast, episode 105.
Yeah.
I am a robot.
Welcome back, guardrail robot. It's good to have you.
All right.
Thank God we needed you.
Yeah, no Modelo tonight, just Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, hell. What's your flavor?
My flavor of choice is Samoa. Okay. This evening.
I feel terrible, but I'm totally one of those people that avoids the Girl Scouts at the store because I can't eat any of them, and it breaks my heart to tell them no every time, but I can't just, like, buy cookies I'm never fucking going to eat ever.
I'll eat them. Then you can feel good, and then I can eat cookies. It's a win-win situation.
And the cookie eater tonight, that is the voice of John Kelly. In Denver, Colorado. Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. You got me thinking about cookies. I don't know if I can talk primaries now.
And the man, the myth, the legend up in Evergreen, Colorado, John Anderson.
Oh, hey, everybody. Hey. So, Blake, it's funny that you mentioned 105, because did you know?
No. It's 105.
Okay. Well, in 105 B.C., took place the first gladiator battle in Rome.
Ooh,
as part of a training program for the military. Shablam! History fact!
That was good. Two straight history ones.
Two straight history ones.
I like it.
No more math.
That's a solid fact, John.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I was very happy to find that one. It took a little while, actually. The 105 Wikipedia was not as good as the 104 one, disappointingly. But, you know, I figured it out. It's all right. I got a history degree. I know how to do Wikipedia shit. All good. I checked my source on Wikipedia before did the thing. So it's cool.
www.iheartromanhistory.com.
It was some guy from 92, some professor. I don't know. Actually, I've got it up. I can tell you if you're interested.
Not that much.
Are you sure? So, is this not the Roman History Podcast? I have a lot to say about that. So the source is Emperors and Gladiators by Thomas Weidman, published in 1992. So blam. Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. History fact.
There you go. Join us next time for more history facts. Yeah.
I always look forward to what these are going to be. It's like a fun part of my day. It's like, hey, what's the fun fact?
John, I greatly appreciate it.
Well, good.
Thank you very much. So it's the trio today, ladies and gentlemen. Tyler is on a secret mission, doing secret things.
Shaman things. Maybe that was too much detail.
Maybe he took the night off just to study your fantasy hockey league stats.
Legitimately wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's something he would do, for sure.
Well, yesterday, everybody, was Super Tuesday. I hope you voted.
Super Tuesday! Bow, wow, wow!
Mm-hmm. I voted. I know you guys voted.
Were you guys excited as that horn that I just made? Because I was that excited. Blake, who'd you vote for in the primary? We didn't get to talk about it on last week's pod.
Yeah.
That is true. We did not. I realized that listening to that episode that I was going to have to make my reveal this episode. I voted for, and because I knew that she, I mean, ultimately, I did not think she was going to win, but she's my favorite.
Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah. End of podcast.
Permanently.
That's how we go out, boys. No, I voted for Elizabeth Warren.
Nice. Okay.
Hell yeah.
I did.
Question, who, if we were doing rank order voting, who would be number two for you, Blake?
Well, probably Amy.
Among those who are still in the race.
Oh, in the race. I'd probably end up with Joe Biden.
Okay. Interesting. So yeah. I was having a chat about, you know, where, because it's interesting. So you have kind of some lanes developing, pretty clearly. I think you have like Biden, Klobuchar, Pete, Lane, and then you have, the like Warren, Bernie Lane. And it's interesting to me about where Warren people are going.
Yeah.
And there was a visualization from the Washington Post I was looking at about like whose second choices are, blah, blah, blah. And it looked like it was about 50-50 of Warren people going from to Bernie or Biden.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. She casts a wide net in terms of her support. And I feel some of it is really progressive policy driven. Other parts of it are her record and her stance in Washington and her leadership. And I think that that's a good divide. I hadn't seen that Washington Post article, but I was thinking about it earlier today, and I thought that you'd probably have a pretty even divide between supporters where they would go. Mm-hmm.
So interestingly, too, with Warren and Bernie, they do this great visualization. It's from an article from January 28th, 2020 in the Washington Post called "A New National Poll Answers a Critical Question, Who's the Second Choice of Democratic Voters?" I'd recommend it for people because it's really interesting. They have some really interesting visualizations, which obviously doesn't translate well to podcasting. However, there's two dimensions where Warren and Bernie are like the most split demographic wise in their support among Democrats. One is men and women.
Interesting.
Women among all Democratic primary voters, Biden's like right in the middle. Bernie gets the most support from men, and Warren gets the most relative support from women. Mm-hmm. Another way in which they're really they split the Democratic field generally is income. People with lower income tend to support Bernie, and people with higher income tend to support Warren. So
that I would have guessed natural, that one. I would have guessed that one. Yeah.
Yeah. They're natural allies superficially. However, I think there's some really interesting gaps.
Cultural and social cross-cut divides
big time
right there.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, it looks like Biden and Bernie have, I think if just, you know, from the visualization, they have the most split. Like the single biggest split is in age, and Bernie has mad support among youth, and
Biden under 40
support.
He's like high and away.
Yeah, so it's an interesting visualization because you start to almost see the two lanes opening up,
right,
with Bernie and Biden.
Yeah, and I mean I think that also, right, it harkens back, you know, for those of you who didn't pay attention on Super Tuesday, the two biggest winners were Biden and Sanders, which is why we're kind of talking about these two lanes. But the way...
Wait, can we back up real quick?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was endorsements going into Super Tuesday as well that kind of cleared the moderate lane for Biden, which was important going into that. The endorsements from Beto, from Amy, and from Pete were important going into Super Tuesday. Kelly, continue.
Correct, yeah. The kind of consolidation of what you might call the moderate wing of the Democratic Party behind support for Biden in a way to boost his returns on Super Tuesday. Some would say slow Bernie's wins on Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting. I think we've brought this up multiple times, that what you see here is kind of competing aspects within the Democratic Party, right? We've referred to them off and on as different aspects of the party, but you certainly have a strong kind of more central leaning moderate Democratic part of the party. You also have a progressive part of the party that is really pushing for the kind of big changes structurally, societally, that I think a lot of Democrats want to see. Once you get into the conversation about whether or not that's viable on a national stage is why you now have these kind of two camps that are centering around Biden and Sanders after these last primaries.
And we saw this pretty clearly with Clinton and Bernie in 2016.
Yes.
You know, these lanes are pretty much there. So, and then in 08, you had Clinton and Obama was more on the progressive side, but also the political context was much different. And that primary was generally fought over the war in Iraq and the vote to authorize the war in Iraq. And that skews kind of the continuity of the point.
I would say what you're seeing is a much more divided party. Before, starting, say, with the Clinton-Obama and before that, you mainly had the Democratic Party deciding which one of the moderate Democrat candidate will run the party and run for president. There was some progressive movement, but it was not nearly as much of a divide as what you've seen in the last year.
Yeah, let's be clear. For those who don't remember, if you would have said the second leading candidate in the Democratic primary is a identified Democratic socialist, I would have been like, you're high. You're so high right now, aren't you? And so it's pretty crazy. I suppose you could say the party has moved left, although I don't feel super firm in that because part of the party has moved left, but also the center of the party, I'm not convinced, has moved all that much because we are nominating Clinton and it, you know, Biden has a really good chance now. I think it's, you know, spoiler alert, and well, actually, I should not because I'm not in the prediction business anymore. But
you say that, but go ahead and plow on through it and make that prediction.
Let me say, which negates everything that I just said, which is I think it's going to be pretty difficult for Sanders to win the nomination. I think that he can go all the way to the convention. I think it's looking like it's going to be in 2016, which is Bernie has enough to hang in, but he doesn't have enough to win. And
right.
I
don't know if either of them have enough support to outright win. I think you're probably walking into the convention without either of the main candidate, the big candidates, getting enough electorates.
And 538, they have not updated their model since yesterday before the voting, but they have a 61% chance that we go into the convention without a clear winner. Now, it could be that, you know, Sanders knows that he's beaten. He's like, I'm dropping out and endorsing Biden, whatever. That's entirely possible, but it looks like, you know, 6 out of 10 times we're going into the convention without a, quote, winner.
So bringing this back to my first and second choice picks, because I haven't yet explained myself. For those of you who may just be tuning in, Joe Biden was one of my original draft picks.
That's true.
Do you remember what round was he your first round?
Like first round.
Oh, hey, look at you.
And so I believe there's a couple things here. First of all, I want to start by saying I have no problem if Bernie Sanders gets the ticket, Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden, right? Like, I think that they'll all do things that need to get done. I do have a preference, though, for who I think would be the best leader and who, I don't know, I vibe the best with.
Sure, sure.
And I don't know what it is about Mr. Sanders, man, but I just don't gel well with him and his campaign, his speech patterns, I don't know, like there's just something that doesn't vibe well. And so that definitely tied into part of my reasoning.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, we had that conversation during the last one about kind of that presidential attitude, right?
Exactly.
The feeling that someone is presidential, that matters to people and their voting patterns. It certainly connects people to candidates,
and
their poise, how they present themselves.
It could be, and that could, I wonder how many other people feel that way, and how will that affect, down the road, the candidate against Trump in the next presidential election? And I think that probably inside of me, I'm feeling Biden is the stronger choice.
I think that 50% of people who are Warren supporters who are going to go to Biden are feeling that way, Blake, like you are. I don't think that it's an ideological problem that they have with Sanders. I think it's a personality problem they have with Sanders. And like, I feel a similar way. For example, one of the reasons why I supported Klobuchar is because she has a pretty substantial proven record of legislation, both in committee and passing legislation. Sanders has been in for a fuck ton of time and has passed like a bill, I think.
And like I'd like to say that Amy might be the next thing to like a bulldog to like Kamala Harris being like as far as attitude and grit to.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't support Warren. Like, let's be clear. I want Warren's policies enacted. I just don't think that she is the best one to do it. And so that's why I supported, and we talked about this in the last pod, but like, that's why I supported both Klobuchar and Harris over Warren eventually. It was just a personality thing.
It's important, and especially on the national stage. And for a presidential candidate, it is important. Yeah. I think it's interesting when you bring up kind of the track record of the ability to pass legislation, right? Both by, because both Biden and Sanders have been there for so long in Washington. Both have co-sponsored. Right. I think I don't have the exact number, but they're pretty close in getting the same amount passed and what they've co-sponsored. The big difference is that, you know, Bernie makes ideological stands and votes against pieces of legislation that he truly doesn't believe in. And Biden will vote for stuff that is questionable for a lot of people in the Democratic Party. I can see John doing research. He's going to pull up some stats for us, which is good.
I'm looking up some facts because I'm curious about that.
Take your time, cowboy.
Ayo.
Yeah, I don't know much about the data here about like voters specifically and which way they're swinging, but I do know how I feel, and that's how my vote ended up being decided. And I feel like I've been pretty consistent with my feelings.
You have been
beginning.
Consistent with Biden, that's for sure.
Yeah, and again, like, he's not my favorite, but I think that he's just what we need right now to transition back to normalcy.
Yeah.
If we can.
Well, and that's one of the interesting things about Biden versus Sanders is Sanders is making the explicit argument that we're in need of, quote, a revolution, whereas Biden is like, we need to return back to normalcy. And I think that that is, I'll say that I personally really struggle with that because, like, climate change needs a
there's movement. big issues that need quick reaction.
Sure.
We need a World War II level of mobilization to deal with climate change. I don't think that, I mean, like, go ahead and fucking argue with me about that, but I take that as like a factual certainty at this point. That's the kind of mobilization level we need. So yeah, in fact, like, on a policy level, we do need a revolution. However, do I think that we are in any way capable of doing that? No, I don't at all. And I think that we need some, like, quote, normalcy to, as a launch pad to actually get there. It's going to require national unity on a level that is
a lot of organization.
It's going to be World War II level shit. And we can't pass a bill. Right.
I mean, I would argue more along the lines of like a national economic downturn similar to the Depression, which kickstarted a bunch of the social policies that FDR put into place prior to World War II. But it's emergency either way. You have to have some kind of impetus. And as a country, we're not prepared to do that type of mobilization without that level of emergency, whether you relate it more to, say, World War II or the Great Depression.
The thing that ultimately got us out of the Great Depression was World War II mobilization.
It played a huge role.
But
I'm not going to argue against that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it not play a large role in Germany as well?
I believe so, although I have less clear knowledge of that than I do the U.S. It is debatable There isn't like super clear
in Germany. It's very clear that their build up to start World War II was the reason that that got them out of the 20-year long depression. That's pretty clear. The U.S. is a little different, but yeah.
So blam. Anyways, we're digressing into history.
Back to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Yeah.
Exactly. I think that in order to get to that level of mobilization, we're going to need a similar level of unity, and the unity needs to come prior to the mobilization, and we are so far away from unified that I think we need to spend some time on that. We need to invest in that before we can have a major mobilization. And so something like Biden doing a four-year pledge and then being really serious about his vice president and saying, I am the president of unity. I'm here for 4 years to do unifying shit. Then I'm going to hand the ball off to like all these young Democrats and they're going to take the lead on all these big issues. That I think would be what we need. So in the like,
probably it'd probably be helpful in the long term in terms of people actually accepting policy change that you need to really combat climate change.
Yeah,
that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, if to play the opposite, if Sanders got elected and Democrats maintain the House and they win the Senate, they could push through a lot of bills pretty quickly in terms of restructuring the way we fight climate change, which could be the kick in the pants that might actually unify people. If there are these types of the Green New Deal that are implemented where you retrain people, there's guaranteed jobs, it helps poor communities, failing small rural areas, that could really help. But that also depends on a lot of, you know, Senate seats changing, which isn't necessarily going to happen. And so I see what you mean with the personality of the presidents and where they would be the next 4 years could help with the unifying factor to push those in the future.
I think like, as far as success goes, if you give Biden and Sanders the same breakdown in Congress, I bet they don't get all that much different done. So I think the intellectual force is going to, of the party, regardless of who the president is going to be on the younger, more progressive side, like AOC. And so I think that, and Warren as well. So like, I think that either Sanders or Biden are going to be trying to pass essentially the same thing. And it's way more important about who the senators are than who the president is, as far as those things go, as far as passing the legislation goes. But I think I'll say like, and this is why I would have, if I voted on Super Tuesday, I would have voted for Biden.
Right. Rather than sending it early, like we did.
Yeah. Like we did.
Did you actually vote for Democrat? I mean, I know in the last, you debated whether it was going to be that or you're going to do a protest vote in the Republican.
I really thought about it. And then after, after Amy dropped out, I revisited that idea. Sure. But no, I ended up, because any delegates that Amy gets should go to Biden now. So I was like, it's essentially a vote for Biden. So I'm good with that. But that's, you know, I think we need, I am on the moderate side of the party because I think that is going to be the more effective way to get us to the policy goals that we all want.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right? Like we all want pretty much the same thing. I just think that we need to win fucking Senate seats. And I think it's a lot easier to run against the socialist than it is to run against the popular ex two-term vice president. So
right.
I think it's pretty simple calculus at that point.
Can we take a second to reflect on how well Bloomberg did in the state of Colorado?
He was second.
Also,
Sanders,
he
right?
spent
24%.
Yeah. I mean, it's not super surprising to me. There's a lot of moderate Democrats in the state of Colorado that, and Bloomberg spent a lot of money here in terms of advertisement.
I stand corrected. I got the percentage right, 24%, but it's Joe Biden at 24%. Bloomberg dropped a third at 20% in Colorado.
Seems about right.
Yeah. Also, it's totally unclear what the early vote did to skew the results in Colorado. You know, like, for example, I would have voted for Biden if I would have voted. And both my parents, no, I think they ended up voting for Biden. But I know that was a thing for people. So also, like, yes, Bloomberg, I guess, came in second. But he only won American Samoa, and he spent $500 million. So the ROI on that investment, not great. I'm really hoping that he'll win.
Yeah, you could say that again. That's a little bit of an understatement. Not great? Yeah.
You know, I'm not as good of a businessman as he is, obviously, but, like, I don't think that's very good.
You got to spend money to make money. Right? That's what they say.
Well, is it clear that he made money on that? However, I'm really, really hoping that he spends another $500 million on electing the eventual candidate. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Yeah, keep supporting the Democratic Party.
What I'll say about Bloomberg. Yeah, he, from what I saw, I did not watch it myself, but from what I saw, he gave a pretty good speech today. I guess I did see some clips from it, and it seemed pretty unifying. So that's good to see. Overall, I will say that I am pretty... This is one of the first times in a while it feels like an institution, a political institution in America, is, quote, like, operating the way it, quote, should. You know, where, like, we see the party, I think, my reading of this is they see Bernie as not viable in a general election. And so everybody's making the same calculus of we have to rally around one candidate or Bernie is going to get this. And so let's do that. And it just ended up being Biden. And I really, I take that as a hopeful sign, to be honest. It tells me that the leadership of the party is taking this shit fucking seriously, as they should. And I even see that from Bloomberg. I totally thought Bloomberg was going to stay into the convention, but he dropped out.
I thought
was all about Bloomberg, but he dropped out and endorsed Biden. That's the other big thing. So yeah,
I mean, I hope it's a unifying thing as well. I mean, I think that the elites of the party are certainly rallying around Biden. It makes me nervous that the lanes we're talking about feel like they're going to continue to diverge pretty sharply over the next few months for a lot of voters. And I worry about unifying people in places and states where they were tough battlegrounds for Sanders and Biden, and coming back to the idea of the right blue no matter who, right? Because I see a lot of discussion, I think, from both the Sanders hardcore camp and the Biden hardcore camp that don't really like the idea of voting for the other person, no matter who comes out, right? They'll vote for their guy. And that's what I'm nervous about, which is that it tears the base of the party away from each other too much and gives Trump a clear path back to the White House for a second term.
Kind of like we talked about last week, I think it is totally unclear about what the plus minus will be about losing people on the left and then gaining people on the right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it's really tough to tell. So I understand the point about Bernie supporters. I'm worried about that. Also, like, what's the alternative? Give them the nomination. I think that puts us in a worse place as far as winning the presidency. So to me, I think the answer to that is, hey, Buttercup, like, fucking suck it up, because the alternative is another four years of Donald Trump. So fucking plug your nose and vote for Joe Biden. Like, get over yourself. Yeah. Stop it. That, I think that's the answer, ultimately. And if those people are going to be, if it's Bernie or bust for them, like, then it's Bernie or bust for them. And I think that they're not, that's a them problem, not a Democratic Party problem. At this point, that's a long-term problem, but in terms of this election, I don't think that the Democratic Party should be factoring in much of that, because I do think that I think we're undergoing a party realignment, and I think there's a lot of opportunity on the right side of the part of the Democratic Party that's possible for them to get, and we should be focusing maybe more on that than we should be on the left of the party.
So you're saying that issue falls more under, like, the same category that, say, apathy would fall under?
I think it's a lower...
It's like a social problem, right?
Partly, I think it's a problem that is not, quote, fixable by the party. I think it's a problem that is, quote, fixable. And I should quote...
Man, I wish you could see the air quotes that he's throwing at the listeners. Great. They're pretty big. They're pretty big.
No, I'm trying to be, like, charitable. Because, like, I understand a lot of Bernie folks' frustration. I guess I feel similar to Bernie, some Bernie supporters that I do about, like, anarchists, where I'm like, you're not being useful or helpful, and, like, you just want it your fucking way, or you want to burn it down.
There are
and,
some like, supporters
that's just
that
not
like that, yeah.
How politics has worked since literally the Greeks. So, like, you could be mad about it, but you being mad about it isn't going to change shit. So, like, let's figure this out. You know, I think basically they're being unreasonable in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be interested. I'll be interested to see who ends up getting the nomination, because I'll probably vote for either of them over Trump. I mean, it's almost a guarantee in my mind. Had it been Bloomberg, I would have had a serious like sit down and have to think. If he would have come out as a Democratic nominee, that would have been tough.
I think I would have been okay. Well, I wouldn't have been okay, but I wouldn't have had to have like if Tulsi Gabbard won,
that would have been a tough one too.
I quit. I'm done. I can't with this timeline anymore, and I'm moving to the farthest reaches of Alaska, if that shit
no,
happens.
See, still the U.S., man. You'd become an expat and go to Canada, and you could just skate sure. to your heart's content. I hear they have longer winters up there because, you know.
That's what I would do. I would get the fuck out. Bloomberg, I'm not at that level. I'm like, we have really, really seriously horrible problems in America, but at least Bloomberg doesn't. Like, I think Donald Trump on a daily basis increases the probability of nuclear war by, like, several magnitudes. That might be, like, 0.01 compared to 0.00001, but that's unacceptable to me. So Bloomberg being president, like, that calculus alone means that Bloomberg probably gets my vote, because I don't
that's fair.
Blow us all
yeah,
up.
Yeah, that's fair.
But, like, I'm also, when I'm casting that vote, being like, I am now welcoming our oligarchic yeah. overlords. And we're yeah. Rome. We're, like, late Republic, right. early Empire Rome. And yeah. I am seriously freaking out. But I'm also not freaking out about nuclear war and winter. And I will take, like, late stage Roman Republic over nuclear winter. But, you know, that's the timeline we live in, is those are the calculuses we're making. So God bless America.
On that note.
Are we done?
Is that all right? Do you guys have anything else to say? Any last? Okay. Great.
I've got other thoughts, but we could save them for other pods.
Yeah.
I have so many thoughts about so many things that yes, but like we should end the pod.
Okay.
And you can, so yeah.
Cool.
You know,
definitely rate us and like us. Leave us comments. Let us know what you want us to talk about.
Yeah,
we're happy for suggestions.
Definitely agreed. An Easter egg for you. I'm really glad that the Ape Drapes is not going to win. Not going to make the playoffs because they had fucking Putin as their picture last year.
Boom.
And karma, karma is a bitch.
Boom.
Godspeed, everybody.
So I just want to interject real quick. Somebody is making a lot of squiggly noises on my end. I don't know if it's going to affect your recording.
I don't hear anything, so it must be on my end.
I hear that too.
What does it sound like?